Welcome once again to Word on the Hills, with me, Gwyn Cheltimer, my co-host Felicity Signal-Reed, and our guest this week, Ted Staunton. Each week at this time, we visit with an author, perhaps an editor or a publisher from our region, anyone connected to the world of words. We hope to find out a little more about their lives, what prompts them to write, and give them an opportunity to read from their work. This week, we're very pleased to welcome Ted Staunton for a return visit. Ted Staunton is the award-winning author of many books for children and young adults. He was born in Toronto and studied at the University of Toronto. When he went back there to Teachers College in 1981, he wrote a story called Puddle Man for one of his courses, and rather to his surprise, it was published. Puddle Man was a picture book, but he has since written many stories for older children and young adults. Some of the most recent are Who I'm Not, which won him the John Spray Mystery Award, Jump Cut, and Power Chord. Ted speaks and performs at schools and libraries across Canada and frequently brings his banjo with him. He also teaches courses on writing for children at George Brown College and at the Halliburton School of the Arts. Welcome, Ted.
Great to be here again, Gwen. Thank you for having me.
Since we talked to you last on this program, Ted, you've published several more books, and the Seven series, to which you contribute, has continued its huge success. Can you tell us a little about that series overall?
Sure. The Seven series is a collaboration by myself and six other writers for kids and young adults. The initial idea came from my pal Eric Walters, who's a prolific writer. The basic premise of the series is that there are seven grandsons, seven cousins, some of them are siblings, and the series kicks off with each of them being asked to do something for their late grandfather via his will. Now, the idea of this series was, I won't quite say groundbreaking, but it had a big success in part because all seven books were published at once. The stories link together, but you can read them in any order so that you'll find little bits and pieces of overlapping information and additional bits of story and so on if you read them all. But again, as I say, you can start wherever you want and finish wherever you want. And for example, in a place like a library, this is huge because you don't have a lineup waiting for book number four, because there is no book number four. As a writer, it's really fun to do because you have to know what the others are working on and what they're writing about and how maybe you can sneak in there a little bit. But at the same time, of course, you can't give away anybody else's plot.
Right.
You know, it's no fair giving away how someone else's book ends, you know, in chapter two of yours. They get upset about that kind of thing. So it's a neat little challenge. We wrote the first series, as I say, about the boys fulfilling sort of their grandfather's last wishes. And those books, to our delight, were very, very successful. So oddly enough, we decided, hey, let's write another round. Why not get paid twice? And so the second series was released. And in that second series, the premise was that the boys accidentally discover that their grandfather may have had a darker side to his life. Had he been involved in some kind of espionage? Mm-hmm. And if he was, was he even one of the good guys, or was he playing in that shady gray area that, say, John le Carré explores all the time? We got those done, and again, they're very well received. So this fall sees the publication of the third set of seven books, but this time we decided what we would do is write the prequels.
Okay, before the grandfather died.
Before the grandfather. Yes. you gave it away. Gwen, so much for this interview. Yeah, we decided let's revive grandpa and make all the kids about, you know, 12 or 13 years of age. The premise this time will be that the grandfather takes each of the boys on some kind of a sort of bonding trip that turns into an adventure. And this is a way of introducing the characters is kind of late, but it also gives us the advantage of knowing what's coming next, so we can slip in little hints of things to come in the books that will for a lot of readers will follow.
Right.
Again, lots and lots of fun.
Yeah. Now, you've got seven authors, seven children. That's a lot of characters to keep track of and to understand which character is which and who would react in which way and so on.
You're telling me. And so, you know, some of the writers respond to that by, in fact, concocting stories that pretty much stand alone. Others of us prefer to kind of plunge in and see what happens. So I'm kind of in the latter camp. Maybe I'm getting old and tired of generating plots, but in fact, what I like to do is find out what's going on with some of the others and see what I can steal. So it's been, in fact, I've worked very closely with one of the other writers, an ex-Cobergian, Richard Scrimgeour.
Right.
Richard and I decided to write about brothers, and we decided early on that each time some elements of our stories would overlap and link together. You could read them independently, but if you read both, you'd sort of figure, is that why so-and-so said that in chapter 12?
Because you're going to get two different perspectives on the same event.
Exactly.
Right.
So in the newest book, in fact, what we decided to do was, since Grandpa is taking all these, you know, the grandsons on, you know, some kind of, as I said, some kind of trip or excursion, we decided that it would make sense that he would take these two guys together.
Oh.
And so our adventures are happening simultaneously.
So you're doing two books about one adventure.
Yeah, but the boys get separated early on.
Okay.
And part of the fun of writing it was figuring out how they... In ours, what happens is the grandfather takes them on a camping trip. And they go to a mythical provincial park called Queenston Provincial Park, where there's going to be a War of 1812 reenactment. And the boys almost immediately get separated. And then we had to figure out how they would spend the next 24 hours just missing each other as they ricochet back and forth across this park, but at the same time make it seem realistic so that, you know, Grandpa hasn't called it the OPP or something to try
right.
and find where they are.
And that they're also having an adventure while they're doing that, so it's not just a chase.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. You know, are they going to chase each other? No. So it was tricky, and then it was fun.
So you sat down with Richard and did all your plotting really together because you had to.
Yeah, we agreed that they would go on a camping trip. You know, a lot of plotting, well, certainly for me anyway, is I wait for things to come my way. I was chatting with someone utterly unrelated to this, and they mentioned, and I had been reading a book about Civil War reenactors, and this fellow said, oh, I often play music at pioneer reenactments here in Canada. And I phoned up Richard and said, they go to a reenactment. And then Richard contributed something about he wanted his to have some kind of resonance. Remember the old TV show, The Fugitive?
Oh, yes.
The one-armed man that
yep.
he was always saying.
That never got caught.
That never got caught. Richard said, my guy's going to be chasing a one-armed man. I said, why? He said, I have no idea, but we want to do that. And then we would go off and plot on our own for a while, get back together and compare notes and say, okay, they could miss each other by 30 seconds at this place. Or, okay, and this is what Grandpa was doing right before. Or, where's your guy off to? So I could have that character pop up in my next scene.
Oh, lots fabulous.
Yeah.
Oh, it does sound like a lot of fun. Are you going to read us a little bit from one of the series?
I thought that what I might do is read from my newest title in the new series, which, of course, is just out this fall. Now, my particular contribution is called Speed. I'll preface it just a touch by saying that in the other books, Spencer, who is 16 and 17 in the first stories, he's obsessed by movies, and he wants to go to film school. I thought in this book what I could do is maybe try and indicate where Spencer first got the germ of that idea that he'd like to try this. So this is bound up in the story. Spencer and his brother Bunny and their grandfather, as I mentioned, have gone camping at Queenston Provincial Park. Spencer does not like camping. Spencer is sort of a books, movies, videos guy. He doesn't like the outdoors, and things have gone from bad to worse. He's not a big kid, and his mother has made him wear these gigantic baggy cargo shorts that he hates. And he's also committed the worst sin of all. He's just been given a new cell phone, and he was told not to bring it with him in case he lost it. He put it in the cargo shorts, and of course, as the book opens, he loses it.
Well, take it away.
Okay. This is from chapter 2. 2, I believe, Spencer thinks he remembers where he left his cell phone. He sneaks away from camp, and he goes back to an ice cream store right at the edge of the park. There, he finds out that his phone isn't there, but an employee saw what might have been his phone picked up by a tall man wearing white pants, a blue jacket, and a funny hat. He heads back into the park, preoccupied with his impending doom, and immediately gets lost. And this is what happens. I'm still thinking about this when I hear strange thumping noises. I look up and find I've got a new problem. I don't know where I am. Have I taken a wrong turn? This is not what I need right now. The thumping is coming from behind a line of trees that I don't remember. Something's moving back there. I shove my glasses up. I jog over. A voice barks something. I hear clattering and scraping, and then I'm peering through the leaves at a line of men holding rifles. They're all pointed at me. Fire! There's a rolling clap of thunder, and the world rips in half. Dragon flames belch from the rifle barrels. I think I yell as I jump back, and then I'm down. A gray-white cloud swallows me, and the world goes silent. I'm wrapped in cotton. I don't even feel my wounds. Is this what dying is like? If it is, dying smells like the firecrackers Grandpa has for us at the cottage on long weekends. Then the men with guns burst soundlessly through the cloud. Their mouths are open. They're stabbing the air in front of them with bayonets as they run past me. I tuck into a ball and I feel their boots thud past. The ground stops shaking. I open my eyes. I can see. My glasses have made it to heaven with me, if that's where I am. What I'm seeing through the cloud is my feet, lying along a thick electrical cable snaking through the ground, inches from a patch of poison ivy. I wiggle my toes. They work. So do my fingers. I pat my body for bullet holes. I don't feel any. There's no blood on my hands either. Maybe I'm alive. I sit up, and now my ears are ringing, and I hear a voice, faintly, from somewhere past the smoke, which is drifting away. I look up, and back where the men fired their rifles at me, 3 people are standing. Grandpa would call them kids, but they're older than me, and I'm finishing grade 7. They're university age, maybe, and they've got some kind of camera, and one of them is waving this way. I look behind me. The men have stopped running just past the trees. They're taking the bayonets off their rifles and beginning to stroll back. One is lighting a cigarette. A couple more are checking their cell phones. I see now they're all in old-fashioned soldier uniforms that I recognize from school. The War of 1812. And guess what? Their uniforms are white pants, blue coats, and tall, funny hats.
Mm-hmm. So which one of them has his cell phone?
I'm not telling.
Thank you so much, Ted. We've been talking with Ted Staunton about the new books in the 7 series, and we'll talk some more right after this short break.